Hey, everyone. Thanks for joining us on this week's Blackhawks Crazy Podcast. It's your Blackhawks pre and post host on WGN Radio. Chris Bowden joining you solo as our co-host Scott King has some commitments, but there are no lack of things to discuss, or more appropriately here, because the NHL trade deadline passed at 2 o'clock Monday with the Hawks making a pair of moves leading up to it. During practice, they traded Ryan Hartman, who wasn't on the ice, to, somewhat surprisingly, division rival Nashville to provide some depth for what is potentially a Stanley Cup run, that after winning the West last season. The Hawks also sent their fifth-round pick this year to the Preds. In return, they received Nashville's first and fourth-round picks and 6'5", 22-year-old center Victor Edschel, who has 30 points in 44 games with his Swedish league team. That's where he'll remain for the rest of the season. Tommy Wingles, who was most recently playing on a line with Jonathan Toews and Brandon Saad, did practice with the team, then was informed afterward he was going to Boston for a conditional 2019 fifth-round pick. So, who knows, maybe Hartman and Wingles face off against each other in the Stanley Cup Final this spring. Here's about 10 minutes of Stan Bowman's press conference where he compares the disappointment of this season to that of being swept out in the first round by Nashville last spring. He also discusses the factors that have resulted in the season the Hawks have had, the so-called championship window, also Corey Crawford, a busier Rockford shuttle the rest of the season, and venting Hawks fans. However, he begins with why Hartman was traded.
It was a tough trade to make, obviously, but when you take a step back, I got a lot of calls over the last 7 to 10 days about Ryan, and it really wasn't, the things that were being thrown or proposed to me were not really appealing at all. And then in the case of Nashville, they made a very strong offer, and we felt with the value that we were getting for him, it was a really tough deal to pass up. So starting with the first round pick in this year's draft, it's going to give us two picks. Obviously, our own pick is going to be an earlier pick, and this one will be a later pick, but I still think that's a high value. You know, all you have to do is look back to last year's draft. We ended up taking Henry Yokoharu 29th overall, and we even took Ian Mitchell 57th. So those are two of our best up-and-coming prospects right now, would be Yokoharu and Mitchell. So you can get really good players in that that range. And then you throw in the centerman, Victor Edsel, and he's not really a throw-in. He's a very talented centerman, big kid, about 6'5", highly skilled player. He's a bit of a late bloomer. This is his first year that he's been in the top league in Sweden. He was the MVP of the second league last season, and he moved up, and he's been a very good player there. So he's 22 years old, so he's probably closer to being an NHL player. We certainly have high expectations for him. We have to get him over here and see, you know, where he fits in terms of if he's ready next year for the NHL. He could be, but we're not trying to put too many high expectations on him. But so in the short term, obviously it's hard to let a player like Ryan go, and but I felt that we had two really high value assets to complement. I look at our organization, and we've got some really good young players. I mentioned Mitchell and Yokoharu. When you add in Nick Schmaltz and Alex DeBrincat that are here, Dylan Sakura, who's on the way here, and then two more first round picks this year, and Victor. That's a lot of players that have a chance to really impact our team going forward over the next couple seasons.
Stan, I know you talked about this a couple weeks ago about you guys being in seller's mode, but is it still a bit of a jolt to be standing here on trade deadline day and being in the mode that you guys are in?
Oh, it's disappointing for sure, but I think you have to, you can't feel sorry for yourself. You got to sit here and try to plan for the future. And I think what we've been able to do here today is position ourselves to get some really high value assets. That in the case of Victor, he's not that far away from contributing. So we don't want to be in this position, obviously. But you are where you are, and you got to try to make the best of it. So that's how we approached it.
You talked last spring after the playoffs how angry you were and how disappointed you were, and things had to change. And mm-hmm. That was after a 50-win season. How do you look at things a year later here?
Well, yeah, I think the disappointment, the biggest disappointment last year was really sort of the manner in which we lost. We didn't win a game. We barely scored a goal, and that was really tough to take. So I think where we are today is equally frustrating, but it's sort of in a different way. We haven't had the season that we wanted. And I think the one bright spot is the best thing that's happened this year have been the progression and the emergence of some of our young players. So the fact that they've been able to take that next step forward certainly bodes well. Now, we need to get some other things better, you know, in order for our team to have a rebound year next year. But, you know, trying to look on the bright side, there's been some good things. Some players took some steps, and I think we've got a lot of players, a lot more younger players that are trending up. So there's a lot of things that are reasons to be optimistic. But, you know, clearly this is not where we want to be. But you got to try to make the best of it.
Do you think that the disappointment more on Corey's injury, on Brandon Saz not doing what you expected him to do? Where do you put most of the reason for the disappointment?
I don't know if it's one thing. I don't think it would be fair to put it all on one thing, because it's when you're in the situation we're in, it's obviously a combination of things. You know, Corey's, you know, he was playing great, and you know, he hasn't been here for a while, so that has hurt. Now, it's not the only thing, though. You know, we have to improve in some areas, but I don't think you can point it on just one thing. I think you know, we are where we are, but we're trying to get better, and we're optimistic, and we're looking forward.
With the core players that you still have, is your championship window still open? Some people think it's closed.
Yeah, that I don't know if I subscribe to that whole theory about a window. I mean, things in our sport, more than anything, they change pretty dramatically year to year. I think all you have to do is look at a team like Vegas, who's come in. I mean, I don't know what you would have put their window at, but now here they are leading the league. So it's there's not a lot of explanation for that. You know, I think the one thing you've seen is teams can change. They can turn things around really quickly, and they can also fall off quickly. You know, Tampa Bay is a great example. They didn't make the playoffs last year, and they're probably one of the top teams this year. And they didn't make dramatic changes over the summer. So you can change year to year. So there's, like I said, you can certainly go up and you can go down. So the whole window thing, I mean, we need to be better. There's no question about that. But as far as a window of time, I'm not sure I'd buy into that.
You guys have a bounce-back season kind of lies in whatever Corey's status is, and it seems like Joel's been a little bit more pessimistic of him coming back this year. Are you confident that he comes back this year or next year, or he's the same player as he has been?
Well, none of us can read into the future or predict anything. As far as Corey playing this year, I can't say. I don't know that. What I can tell you is Corey's not going to play until he's completely medically cleared and he comes and says, I'm ready and I want to play. When those two things happen, then he's going to be back playing. So it certainly could be over the next 5 weeks, or it might not be. So, but we know that, eventually Corey Kraft is going to play hockey again. It's just, you know, you got to be patient with some things, and when he's ready, he's ready.
But doesn't it make any sense to bring him back with like 5 games in the season or something like that?
Well, in what sense? What do you mean?
Well, I mean, if you're out of the playoffs and he says, I'm ready to go, I want to play hockey again, and there's 5 games left, I mean, is that something you guys would do? You wouldn't bring him back with 5 games left in the season, right?
Well, athletes want to play. So if Corey's 100% healthy and our doctors say he's ready to go and he's saying, I want to play, it would be sort of odd for us to say you're not allowed to play. But we're not at that point yet, so it's not something we have to really discuss. So when we get there, we'll see.
Stan, what's the goal between now and the end of the season? Do you consider maybe bringing up some of the younger guys from Rockford and evaluate what they can do in the NHL?
The goal between now and the end of the year is to try to find as many positives as we can. And I think when you're in this position, we still want to be a team that tries to win. And, you know, if anything, we want to try to see, find some chemistry, some combinations, find out about some of the younger players, what roles they could realistically play next year. Looking at our schedule, I would say most every team we play is going to be a team that's fighting. There's only a few teams that really aren't in playoff contention. So we're going to be playing some hungry teams. So the games still matter. It'll be a test for our guys, and I think it's an opportunity to see in a competitive environment who responds well and who can take on a bigger role. So there will be some opportunities, some players in Rockford that have had a good season and probably deserve a chance to be here. Some who've been here already and some who haven't been here. So that will play out over the next couple weeks. You know, I don't have any ideas on exactly who, but we have some thoughts on that.
Stan, some Blackhawk, many Blackhawk fans, I'm sure you're aware, are angry. They're angry about this season, what happened last season. Some vent, some say fire the coach, some say fire the general manager, some say fire both. Mm-hmm. What's your reaction to that?
I think the passion of our fans is really a strength, and it's when you're not where you want to be. You know, I love the fact that our fans care so much. You know, I think there was a time a long time ago when that wasn't the case. We weren't relevant, and now we are, and with that comes expectations. And, you know, I think that's part of being in this sport is people want you to win, and they care about our team. And I love the passion that they bring. And, of course, they're going to be unhappy, and we're unhappy with where we're at. So that all makes sense, and it's certainly understandable. But I think the one thing we do, you know, we're really appreciative of the fact that our fans do care as much as we do, and it's our job to make sure that we're in a much better position next year.
But after the playoffs last year and then this year, where is your confidence level that Joel is the right guy to turn this around, especially with so many young players?
Well, it's not just Joel, though. I mean, I think it's a lot of things, right? There's a lot of, like I said, it's not one reason that we haven't played well. So we have to be better across the board, whether it's the players, coaches, managers. Everybody has to find a way to improve where they're at. And I think our young players are probably the only ones that maybe are immune from that because they've done their job. You know, they've taken that next step, whether it's Schmaltz or DeBrincat, or Vinny. I mean, they've all been really good this year. Even Carl Dahlstrom's come in here quietly and been a nice addition. So, you know, I think they've sort of held up their end of the bargain, and they're pushing for bigger roles. And now, you know, sort of the rest of us have to find a way to be better.
So that's the Blackhawks vice president and general manager with the team and the stash of picks he has moving forward for the season Hartman's had. It's a pretty good return. Hartman going to be a restricted free agent whose price would probably have been cheaper because he didn't have the numbers he did a year ago. But the unknowns, whether he can get back to that level at such a young age, replacing what he brought to the table for the Hawks next year, and getting that low first rounder they'll get from Nashville, getting that pick right. The Hawks will now look to the likes of John Hayden, perhaps another minor leaguer or an offseason acquisition, to fill Hartman's role moving forward. Now, one of the players most affected by Hartman's departure is Vinny Hinostroza, who grew up in the northwest suburbs along with Hartman. They played youth hockey and some youth football together. In the last couple of games, they'd been playing on a line together with David Camp. Here's how Hinostroza reacted to the news after Monday's practice.
I don't really know what to think. I haven't talked to him yet, but I know he's probably upset but excited for a new beginning. I mean, we're always going to remain best friends, so it's not going to change anything, and we'll always spend our summers together and stuff. So, I mean, it's not terribly hard. It's obviously tough to see him go. He's a great player, a great person. So, I mean, it's going to be weird at first, but still got to focus on just playing here and focus on myself, focus on my teammates. So,
do you think he had a sense that something like this might happen?
You know, I don't think so. I think his heart was definitely here. He wanted to be here. But I'm sure now that he's being traded, I don't even know where he's going. But I'm sure, okay, Nashville, I'm sure he's his heart's there now right away. I mean, it's a business. Knew it could happen. Knew we wouldn't be playing together forever. I mean, things happen all the time. So, we'll still keep in touch every day and remain best friends. So,
how do you find out about it?
I don't know, I was on the ice early shooting, so kind of as guys started coming out, they said, I think Archie's being moved. So, like I said, I haven't been able to talk to him, or hopefully he's still here. I can go give him a hug before he gets out of here, maybe grab a bite or something, I don't know.
It's kind of a head-spinning day for you, especially considering how close you guys were, and knowing the nature of the business here, even though, you know, you knew this is part of it too.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, we're really close since we were little kids. We went away, played different places in junior, and I went to college, so it's not like we've been apart before, and it was an unbelievable experience and something I'll never forget, starting my NHL career with Hartsy here, and I know he feels the same way, so I mean, I'm really excited for him, and I want to be a huge fan and keep supporting and watching him until we play each other, but yeah, I mean, nothing's going to change between us.
So in the West, the Preds, who made a big trade to get Kyle Turris earlier in the year, are thinking Hartman and the unretirement of Mike Fisher are their finishing touches. It's interesting to see Dallas stay put as they flirt with the standings, and the slumping St. Louis Blues seemingly cashing in by trading Paul Stastny to division rival Winnipeg, strengthening the Jets' cause. Minnesota pretty much stayed put. Meantime, in the Pacific, the aggressors were Vegas by adding Tomas Tatar from Detroit. San Jose getting Evander Kane from Buffalo in exchange for a similar package that the Preds gave the Hawks for Hartman. And finally, the LA Kings, they did all their work in the days and weeks leading up to the deadline, acquiring the likes of Dion Phaneuf and Tobias Reeder, while perhaps most importantly getting Jeff Carter back from an injury that sidelined him most of the season. Those were your aggressors in the West. Finally, now we circle back to a visit we had with the one and only Eddie Olczyk over the weekend. Eddie, thankfully, finally completed his treatments for colon cancer last week and is now rejoining the Blackhawks back in the television booth for this week's three-game road trip to California. And we pick it up from Saturday's post-game show with Eddie sharing his relief and thanking his wide range of support.
I believe that I'm way tougher than I ever thought I was, Chris. When you are diagnosed with this disease, you feel weak. You feel like you've let everybody down. You know, you question your inner strength. You question your mortality. And at the end of the day, is that there anybody out there that goes through this? They're the opposite. You are tough. And to me, that's what I've kind of proven to myself, that to be able to go through this. And look, I've had a lot of support, and I couldn't do it by myself. And I needed the support because I couldn't do it alone. And I think that's the one thing that I learned a lot. And look, you know, I spent 16 great years in the National Hockey League, and not easy to make it to the greatest league in the world at the highest level. And I think I proved to myself that I'm way tougher than I ever thought I was. And I think that goes for anybody that has to fight this horrible disease, is that you are tough, you are strong, and you have to have that great belief.
Agreed. How important was the carrot of doing games for you through all this?
Well, look, I had the open canvas when I had my initial meeting with John McDonough a couple of weeks after I had my tumor taken out. He said, when you want to work, you work. If you're not feeling good, you rest. If you want to work 5 minutes before a game, we'll make it work. If you feel like you can work and you don't feel well, then we'll make it. So having that support and that open canvas to know that I could work when I felt I was up to it and knew that I could do the best job I could, Chris, that made everything so easy. And the same thing at the folks with NBC, Sam Flood, my boss there, the same thing. I had an open canvas and said, you know, you want to do five games, you do five. If you want to do 50, you do 50. If you want to do none, well, you know, your chair is going to be there for you. And that means a whole heck of a lot. And lucky enough that, you know, I didn't have to work. I didn't have to try to really fight through, because anybody knows that when you take your chemo, again, my chemo, I took for 48 hours. And it took me a couple of days. Usually it took me at least till, because I got it every other Monday. And usually by the time I got to Saturday, I was starting to feel halfway decent. And you know, I would lose 2 weeks a month of the possibility of doing games. But I think the normalcy, sitting next to the great Pat Foley or Doc Emmerich, you know, being around the guys, being around the team, no disrespect to the game, but it was a great distraction going through this, and just for a handful of hours in a day that I was able to not think about, you know, my personal journey or battle.
And it speaks to how valuable you are to everyone that you work with as well. A couple hockey questions now.
Sure.
And I'll leave this pretty open-ended. Sure. What have been your main impressions in what has been a disappointing Blackhawks season? And your main concerns moving forward, especially with the play of some of these guys who have carried the Hawks for so long over the past 10 years, and perhaps some areas of optimism?
Well, look, I mean, I think the optimism first is that I think a couple of guys have really kind of taken their game with the opportunity that's been presented this year. You know, Alex DeBrincat, Nick Schmaltz, Vinny Hinostroza, I think, has kind of been one of more the kind of the unsung heroes, so to speak. I know it's been a tough year and it's been a battle for the Hawks, but he's been, you know, one of those guys that kind of seem to take advantage of that opportunity. And it's a young man's game. It's a quick game. And all three of those guys have, you know, kind of a thread that connects them as far as, you know, being able to play fast and be able to generate and create offense. Yeah, they have blemishes, but, you know, what player in the National Hockey League, except for maybe, you know, maybe one or two guys you could sit there and say that, you know, aren't the perfect player. And but I think those guys are certainly a real positive. I think the back end to me is the greatest concern, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
I think if the Hawks are not able to revamp their back end next year, it's going to be a battle again for them. And that to me is where I've seen the kind of the biggest struggles all season long. And it's just not the back end. I mean, the Hawks are defending way more than they ever have under Joel Quenneville. And when you defend more, you give up more opportunities, and it's tiring. And when you're tired, you make mistakes. And I think that's just the reality of it. And, you know, the big drop-off from being a 109-point team last year to a team that, you know, is on pace for, what, 79 or 80 points, whatever it is. I mean, that's a huge drop-off. But there were a lot of changes that happened, and the team is underachieved, and you've had some big guys have really tough seasons. And look, Corey Crawford was well on his way to an All-Star game and Vezina Trophy, in my opinion, Chris. He gave the Hawks an opportunity early. He was tremendous, and you know, and sadly he got injured. And you know, I don't think the Hawks are out of the playoffs because of their goaltending. Yeah, there's been some bad goals. Tonight's third goal was a bad goal that can't go in on Forsberg. But you know, for me, the Hawks got some, you know, they got some decisions to make. And when your expectations are one thing, and you're sitting in last place for, you know, 45 or the last 50 days, whatever the you know, the amount of time is, I'm sure that that can't sit well with anybody in the organization. So long-winded, you know, they've got some issues that they got to clean up. And it just goes to show you how close the National Hockey League is, because other teams got really good players too. And when you don't get contributions from your big guys consistently and guys underachieve, this is what can happen. And we saw Pittsburgh go through this, you know, a handful of years ago. And, you know, right now, you know, they're looking to win their third straight Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
And, you know, they had some trying times for a couple of years, but they were able to kind of revamp, make some changes, and here they are looking for their third in a row.
And that's a wrap for your Blackhawks Crazy podcast. Be sure to follow along Blackhawks Crazy Facebook page at facebook.com/Blackhawks Crazy for everything Hawks, including Scott's Chelsea blogger blog, and follow me and Scott on Twitter. I'm at Bowden Tweets, and Scott is at Scott King Media. And make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and leave a review. I'm sure we'll have Scott back with us next week. In the meantime, hope you enjoyed listening to Stan Bowman as well as Eddie Olczyk and Vinny Hinostroza. That is your Blackhawks Crazy podcast for this week. We'll talk to you next week.